the annual meeting in June, and concluding at the annual meeting in June 2027. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work within a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, May 15th to ensure consideration. Voting begins Thursday, May 30th and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 30th. More information and board applications are available at WORTFM.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
Good evening, and welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine, right here on Community Radio WORT, 89.9 FM, in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm your host, Jacob Grace. Tonight we're going for a walk on a farm, a very special farm, located in southeastern Iowa, called Red Fern Farm. For decades now, the farm owners, Kathy Dice and Tom Wall, have been experimenting with agroforestry on their farm. Agroforestry, as the name suggests, means farming with trees. Kathy and Tom now have over 80 types of edible fruit and nut trees on their farm. Last summer, I visited Red Fern Farm to interview Tom and Kathy about how other people might get started with agroforestry. These interviews were originally used for a podcast I host called Perennial AF, which is short for Perennial Agroforestry, in case you were wondering, and it's produced by an organization I work for called the Savannah Institute. If you're interested in learning about Red Fern Farm, you can find more interviews and videos at savannahinstitute.org.
Tom likes to say, if it can grow in the Midwest, we've at least tried growing it here on Red Fern Farm. And now he's got over 70 species?
Yeah, somewhere around 75 species of either fruit, nut, or berry, or in some cases...
growing.
Nut. Fruit and nut.
Yeah. And just because it grows does not mean we would recommend other people plant it. There's about five or six that we say, oh yeah, you want to plant these. This will make you money. Of which, chestnuts.
Yep, chestnuts are number one by a wide margin.
Yep, yep.
More important than all the rest of them put together.
Followed by maybe pawpaw.
Pawpaw's a distant second. And then probably a three-way tie between heartnut, Asian pear, and persimmon.
I would say Asian pear is starting to outstrip. It's just very popular.
We usually have an Asian pear crop every year. We don't have a heartnut crop every year.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you guys have done the tests, and those seem to be the top
five that are rising. Southeast Iowa, for our soils, it's going to be different every farm.
Though we do sell this one commercially, this is not a big money
maker. This Cornelian cherry.
It's good to have a few of them around, but you wouldn't want to plant the whole farm to them.
And it's fun to have around because this is kind of a native, because it's on a dogwood.
It's a dogwood, but it's not a native dogwood.
Right. And it's pretty.
It is.
Pretty blossoms, pretty when the fruit's there, yeah.
It flowers with yellow flowers early in the spring before anything else is flowering.
So let's walk into the older groves.
Okay. Perfect.
Deeper shade.
Yep.
Wow. So we're approaching the pawpaw patch, including a little area where we've been doing a controlled cross for seed production of pawpaw. There's grafted Shenandoah and Susquehanna pawpaws right next to each other. So we would carefully harvest all the fruit from those trees because they had really, it was an excellent cross-pollination going on. We called the cross Shensis, And the seedlings from that cross have been incredible. So I'm amazed to see all the root sprouts pretty much cleared away from under these grafted trees, and just a few trees now grafted underneath. So it's like, woo, but that's kind of good too.
What was I going to ask? I've forgotten that.
What mistakes to avoid when doing a planting?
If you had to pick a top two or three mistakes that people make doing agroforestry in the Midwest, what do you think?
Would you say
the first one would be a failure to match the right tree with the right site.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would include having a tree you want to plant, but then not picking the right site to plant it on, or having a site and just picking the wrong trees to put on that site.
Okay.
And things that need to be considered are soil type, drainage, pH, slope, aspect, and just general topography. So you wouldn't want to plant trees that you want to grow a crop on in a low-lying area that's subject to being a frost pocket. Mm-hmm. If you planted things like apple, pear, peach, plum, cherry, apricot on a site like that, you would probably lose the crop almost every year due to frost.
When you think about things like chestnut trees, they're so picky about wanting well-drained, slightly acidic soil. And if you're kind of like, well, I think this is close enough, you're going to have trees die on you over time. I mean, even we, with 20, 30-year-old trees, when we had a really, really wet season, we had trees die.
Okay.
But getting back to the frost pocket, you could probably get away with planting some trees in a frost pocket, like pecans and even chestnuts, which leaf out and flower really late, usually past any late frosts, but you would lose some crops on those too in years with a late frost.
Okay.
It's just that you could get crops on them most years. But also you want to, with the early leafing and flowering things like the apples and pears and peaches and plums and cherries, they need to be located high on the slope of a hill so that air can drain away from them. And especially with some of them, like the peaches and apricots, they're best on a north or northeast facing slope, which will warm up later in the spring, which delays their leafing out and flowering, which is good to do because you don't want them flowering at their normal time because of danger of late frost.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine a lot of people start out and they have some fruit or nut that they're really excited about growing, and they start with that in mind and don't, it's until it's too late, they don't
think about it. They pick the wrong site, yeah.
Yeah.
Or they have a site and decide to plant trees on it and they don't select the right species to put on that site or the right rootstocks.
You heard of someone who ordered thousands of dollars worth of apple trees and he hadn't checked his soils where he was planning on planting?
Yeah, in fact, he...
That's not a good
In fact,
one.
I asked him what kind of soil he was putting. He'd invested $450,000 on an apple orchard.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him what kind of soil he was planting them on, and he said, what kind of soil? What do you mean? There's different kinds of soil?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But by pure luck, the property he bought just happened to have the best soil in the world for growing apple trees. But it was not by planning, it was just dumb luck.
Did you mean for this guy to be like this?
No, a dog probably smelled a mouse in that and grabbed it and tried to pull it off. In fact, you probably see tooth marks.
I'm trying not to scratch it. There we go.
It really doesn't need that anymore.
Okay.
We could take it off and put it on a smaller tree.
Savannah Institute came up with the term antler baffler for those. It's to keep the bucks from rubbing on the tree.
Antler baffler.
Yeah, that was a nice term. Okay, so yes. Site selection.
Site selection number one.
Yes. Yes. Then would it be weed control?
That would be another category is failure to implement effective weed control. Okay. Some people mistakenly think that doing things like mowing around the tree is enough weed control, and it's not. So people point out that, well, Mother Nature doesn't have to do all these things to get seedlings established. But then I point out that Mother Nature plants anywhere from 10,000 to 10 million trees for every one that makes it to adulthood. And not very many people can afford to plant trees that way. And certainly I can't. Even Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates can't afford to do that. Maybe Elon Musk could. But probably nobody else. So there's what I found over the years is there are two main strategies that really work for weed control if you need every tree to survive, which if you're planting expensive nursery stock, you want every tree to survive. So one method is to use a combination of landscape fabric or weed barrier on the ground and then topped with a few inches of coarse wood chip mulch. And then, of course, the fabric has to be stapled down with 9 staples, 8 around the perimeter and 1 in the center. Okay. And if you skimp on staples, when you go over it with a mower, the mower will suck the fabric up into the blades, rip the tree out of the ground and hurl it through the air 50 feet, and very few trees survive that.
You get the idea. That's a voice of experience.
How do you know that, that is exactly what happens.
From bitter experience.
Yeah.
So okay. One staple at each corner of the fabric and 1 halfway between each corner, plus 1 in the center. And then the wood chip mulch on top of that. And that's nearly 100% effective weed control, and also very good at conserving moisture. Okay. But it's also expensive. In fact, if you can get your wood chips for free, that method costs about $1,000 an acre. Or it'll add $1,000 an acre to the cost of a project. And you can plant a lot of extra trees for $1,000. So the other option is to use herbicide. And that's the method I use nowadays most often. And my herbicide of choice is sulfometuron-methyl. Trade name is Oust. And the cost of applying Oust is about 5 cents an acre, not counting the labor. The labor is probably another $5 an acre. So $5.05 an acre to apply Oust compared to $1,000 for...
You got someone walking fast if it's $5 an acre for labor.
Well, that's with a mower pulling a trailer sprayer.
Okay.
So it's like with a wand, but you have it on a...
Yeah, you're riding the mower, holding the wand, and spraying the trees like this as you drive by.
And it's just a circle around the base of the tree, not widespread mow.
Sorry. Yeah, a 3-foot circle around the base of each tree.
Very big difference from the crop duster we were hearing
right.
before.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get dizzy doing all the trees.
No, because I spray the circle like this. I don't drive around the tree. I go by, I approach the tree and go like this.
Now ask about dizziness when we're mowing in circles around the tree. So.
Yeah.
As we're talking about weed control, maybe we should walk over to the sheep so we get some bawling in the background.
That sounds good. Well, I just heard.
Yeah,
you might get
yeah.
too much.
Well, we'll find out. I'll let you lead since you know where they're at right now. They're on rotational grazing, so.
Okay.
And I like that the chickens were right along the lane. Like, yeah. And Rambo the Ram is in that little blue structure over there. I love that name. I cannot claim that name.
That's such a good name.
It is. I heard that. That's like, oh, we got to name ours Rambo, too. Our customers are going to have an easier time harvesting pawpaws this year.
Yep, they will.
One of our problems is we have customers harvesting unripe pawpaws, even though we take them out, every single one, and show them how to judge the ripeness, gently squeezing, movement, smell. But they'll still go ahead and just pick them unripe. And the trees get cleared out even before the first hard frost will come in the fall. Because usually our pawpaw season should go until the first freeze that will make the trees go dormant. But usually the trees have been picked, cleared before then. But it's nice to have a big pawpaw grove for people to come and harvest in. Yeah, they're beautiful. Oh, and this is our resilient tree. Isn't this one? Yeah.
Yep.
This is the only chestnut tree that set a crop on a really, really bad
year. Set a full crop.
Yeah.
So, how many years ago was that?
That was 2019.
Yeah.
So it had a normal crop in 2019. The only a handful of other trees had any nuts at all, and the heaviest crop on the other trees was like a pound or two. Okay. And this one had 60 or 80 pounds or whatever.
So now it's got a variety kind of named after it.
Okay, yeah.
Hey guys! You guys gonna make some bawling noise for us? Thank you.
And the last general category of serious mistakes is a failure to protect trees from animals.
Okay.
And there are lots of animals that like to kill trees.
Would you guys kill a tree?
There's one rubbing on a pawpaw right now. Our biggest nuisances are deer and rabbits, and we absolutely can't plant trees without protecting them from both deer and rabbits. They will kill every last one of them if they're given the chance. But other things that can cause problems too include mice and gophers. And what we found is the best protection from deer and rabbits are 5-foot tall plantra tree shelters. They're 100% protection from rabbits and probably 95 to 99% protection from deer. Near 100% from deer browse, but not quite 100% from bucks rubbing their antlers on them. Mm-hmm. They will sometimes knock a tree shelter right off of a tree with their antlers in the fall.
But they'll work well for keeping sheep off of trees.
Okay.
So as you can see, we don't have the pawpaws in those tree shelters because generally nobody likes to eat the pawpaw leaves.
Pawpaw is one of the few trees that we don't have to protect from deer or sheep because they just leave them alone except for occasionally scratching on them. But they don't browse on the leaves.
We protect them from rabbits because they'll eat even wire. And we use the shelters also to mark, this is a tree. We meant this tree to grow here. Right. Do not mow this tree down.
But the tree shelters do more than just protect the trees from deer and rabbits. They also decrease mortality from other causes, such as drought. They make the trees grow faster. And in the case of fruit and nut trees, they make them start bearing years earlier. For example, if you put a wire cage around a chestnut tree to protect it from deer and rabbits, that will work, but it will take 6 to 10 years before that tree starts producing nuts. Uh-huh. Whereas with a 5-foot planter tree shelter, they can start bearing as little as 2 years after planting, 2 to 4. Mm-hmm. And they also dramatically reduce the pruning you need. So in the case of nut trees, where the nuts need to fall to the ground and then be harvested from the ground, you can't harvest nuts from tall vegetation. So you have to mow under the tree.
Or have sheep
before
graze.
Harvest. Uh-huh. And you can't mow under the tree if the tree has long limbs sprouting out at ground level.
Right.
So you have to have a clear trunk up high enough that you can get under the tree with a mower. Uh-huh. And with the chestnut, without a tree shelter, you'll have to prune every tree every year for 15 years to get that clear trunk.
And we so know that's true, because...
and we have mountain ranges of prunings from every acre.
Our neighbors planted the beginnings of these groves back in the late 90s.
Early 90s.
And there were no shelters
92.
Available that would keep chestnut trees alive. So when we took over the groves, we were pruning and pruning and pruning. And in fact, resilient is part of that original planting. And you could kind of see the difference of the younger, smaller trees, but nice straight trunks versus more kind of twisted and a lot going on.
But yeah, I used to say we've made all the mistakes, and now I know we haven't. But there are still mistakes out there. That...
One we never made, well, I don't think we made, was I saw a tree planting where the person had used tree tubes, but they had not staked them all the way up. Their stake only went like this high, and the tube continued 2 feet higher. Yes, it kind of flopped over in the heat, and it was like, ooh, that's not going to be good for that tree. That's a problem. Yeah. And it's good to share your trials and tribulation along with your successes, because if people are listening, they'll remember your trouble and they won't make that mistake, hopefully.
Yeah.
It's good to learn from your mistakes, but it's better to learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. All right. Well, shall we look at some sheep here?
Yeah. So our flock originally came from Scattergood School, and it is a closed flock. The ladies had never been wormed. So our animals, they're moving every day. Do you want it now? Do you want that? This is Auntie. She was actually a bottle-fed lamb.
And we, like a bottle-fed lamb.
Yeah. And we called her Auntie because we figured she'd never be a mom. She was never quite social with the other sheep. But then she started having babies, didn't you? Okay, who wants a plum pit? I'm throwing it in. See who wants it. You can see they've been kind of trained to eat waste fruit. That's all I had. I'm sorry.
And now they think you're going to feed them something.
Yeah, yeah. So they'll eat persimmons and Asian pears, all the stuff that falls down that gets kind of icky.
Chestnuts.
It gets fallen to them. James, our son, says when the neatest sounds is when he moves the sheep into under the chestnut trees after the season, and he can hear crunch, crunch of them finding the chestnuts that got left behind. Sometimes I wonder if they like the smell of that. Have you smelled pawpaw leaves?
I don't know.
Oh. Get one from a bigger tree.
What?
This is a baby, don't.
Oh, okay, okay. How about, is this one big enough?
I'll just give it a sniff.
Yeah, here, just crush
up
the leaf. Yeah, crush it here. Crush that up and then sniff.
It should be kind of bitter, acrid smell.
That isn't what I was expecting.
No, and we have to.
It's like a pepper.
Green pepper, some people have to. I mean, just unpleasant. And you can see why animals would not want to chew on that.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
I like the spice bush.
And then here, this is what's used for spice. That's a berry. It's not ripe yet, but if you crush that and smell it,
citrus,
it will be even stronger.
I mean, especially, yeah.
You want to put that on a salad.
We were selling those by the ounce when we ever
$8 an ounce, and we've sold as many as 2 ounces a year.
it kind of comes in the category of just go and try it. Pick a few for yourself.
It's not, and never will be a big money maker.
Yeah. But it's fun to have out here, like the Cornelian cherry, the hazels, the aronia. But it's when the Asian pears, the chestnuts, the pawpaws, those are the ones that big poundage and people take it home. And that's where we charge. At our U-Pick now, we've been charging folks $20 and it's come, have fun, eat what you want. Mm-hmm. And if you take anything home, if it's under $20 worth, you've paid for it, you're good. Mm-hmm. But if it's $30 worth of stuff, then it's $30. But we had some customers who'd get like $5 here and $10 here, and it was just too time consuming. You who lambed last, did you have twins?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Because I thought it was just a single, but yeah.
Yeah, we had a late hatch just a couple weeks ago.
They're still cute.
Yeah.
When we planted, this was all, we got it from the neighbors, it was all chestnuts. Some of the older chestnuts, there's an example of one of the originals, started dying or were bad producers. So then we started interplanting groves of like persimmons, Asian pears, heart nuts from back there. And Tom tried planting in raspberries in some of the rows as well. Our neighbors have horses, but they say they really like that we have trees.
Oh.
Because our trees stay here, and they behave, and they're really nice to look at. Mm-hmm. And here we're under the Asian pears now.
Okay.
I can still remember when I got my first tree ripened Nagasaki, and it was had like overtones of cloves along with the sweetness and the slight acidity. It was so good. And then the raccoon got the rest of the ripe ones. But, okay. This is good. Thank you for letting me see these guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
It looks like it's blackberry season now.
Yeah, we do try to do the biodiversity. We are wildlife biologists by training.
Uh-huh.
So we always knew it's important to have diversity. Mm-hmm. Not only for, don't have all your eggs in one basket for when you're relying on a crop, but also for working with nature, for pollinators, for the insects, for pest control. There's so many good reasons to have a diverse landscape, different trees, different bushes. We've had so many crop failures of one or two tree varieties, but then something else would pick up the slack. Thank you. You're welcome. And the secret pawpaw patch is that way?
Nope.
Jeez. I don't know my farm. Oh, yeah. Okay. I get so turned around at this patch. That's what we used to call it because it was away from the north and south.
There was this one tree right here that was loaded with good fruit, and I called that the secret tree.
When somebody really needed fruit and they couldn't...
Yeah, so when the other patches were all stripped bare and that somebody would show up and really wanted fruit, we'd take them to this secret tree.
Yeah.
Okay, in Iowa, I think you could do 25-year leases. So do you feel comfortable?
A 25-year lease would be...
Marginal?
Right on the margin. I mean, if you couldn't get something better, then you would do okay. I mean, you'd break even maybe around year 10 and then profit from 10 through 25.
And if the landowner sees that the trees are producing money, the landowner's more likely to say, yeah, I would see keeping these trees.
At the end of 25 years, the landowner might decide he could manage those trees and take all the money himself.
You know, most landowners in Iowa are female, right? Just saying. Had to get that in there. But yeah, I agree with you. If you don't have a long-term lease, if it's only like even 5 years.
Yeah, that wouldn't be near
that
enough.
That would be sad.
It would be probably ended in disaster.
Haven't we heard of people who thought they had a good agreement with a landowner
yes,
and they planted trees?
I know of multiple cases where somebody thought they had a long-term arrangement, not formalized, with the landowner. They planted chestnuts, and then as soon as the chestnuts were planted, the landowner decided they could manage them themselves and didn't need the person who planted them anymore and kicked them off. So, no, that's not a good idea.
So have it written out. Have it written out.
Yeah.
Have it written out. Yeah. Because that helps.
I would prefer like a 50 to 99 year lease if I was going to be planting trees on land. Like I said, you would end up ahead with a 25 year lease probably, but you'd be way better off with a longer term lease. The strategy I would pursue would be to look at pasture land rather than row crop land.
That's a good
For one
point.
Thing, it's cheaper, and very often it's actually better for agroforestry than the flatter corn and soybean land. Mm-hmm. Another strategy to pursue would be to wait until a farm crisis and then buy the land right at the bottom of the farm crisis, which is what we did.
Yeah, we lucked out.
But that was just by dumb luck.
Yeah.
Accident too.
Oh, we were so lucky.
That was Kathy Dice and Tom Wall talking to me about how they got started doing agroforestry on Red Fern Farm in southeastern Iowa. You can hear our full conversation on the Savannah Institute's Perennial AF podcast at savannahinstitute.org. You've been listening to the Perpetual Notion Machine here on WORT 89.9 FM. and online at WORTFM.org. I'm your host, Jacob Grace. Thanks for listening.
Bluestem Jazz presents Chad McCullough's Modal Horizons, the music of Jim Knapp, featuring Jay Thomas, on Friday, May 8th, 8 p.m. at the Burr Oak. Chicago native Jim Knapp had a long and storied career with affiliations as varied as John Cage, Sam Rivers, Anthony Braxton, Manfred Eicher, and Gil Evans. For the first time in many years, his music will be performed in the Midwest with a world-class 13-piece ensemble led by Chicago trumpeter Chad McCulloch, along with trumpeter and saxophonist Jay Thomas. More information can be found at bluestemjazz.org. Bluestem Jazz presents Chad McCullough's Modal Horizons, the music of Jim Knapp, featuring Jay Thomas, on Friday, May 8th, 8 p.m. at the Burr Oak. Live music lives at WORT Madison.
Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Buddy, welcome to another edition of Radio Literature. Well, here in the studio with me are two outstanding actors, Chad Pfeiffer and Mitch Taylor. This is their first time on this program, as far as I know, unless they were here one of those times when I wasn't, when I was away.
It's our first time.
Yes, first time.
But anyway,